When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about RotoBaller.com. Win big in 2022 with RotoBaller.com's MLB and DFS Premium Pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use RotoBaller's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value plays, research stations, lineup optimizer, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, get your MLB Premium Pass for an extra 10% off with your discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com, use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A for 10% off the Premium Pass for the MLB season, and get started to rotoballing like a boss. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 17. Got a fun one for you. No Bloom boards, but we have recapping a 2023 draft. Yes, I did not misspeak. A 2023 NFBC Draft Champions draft that will be a part of the overall first seven rounds in the books. So we'll get to that. Your recent news, weekly matchups as usual, as Ryan gets me on one topic, I get him in another. So it's rinse and repeat, it feels like, this season. You can find me on Twitter at BDNtrick and my co-host, as always, the aforementioned Ryan Bloomfield on Twitter at RyanBHQ. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic, man. But first, a quick correction to your intro. This is Bubba in the Bloom, episode 17, but I know you're too humble and shy to admit this is Bench with Bubba, episode 500. And that is, honestly, man, that's a milestone. Like, that's really cool for how long you've been doing this and how long you've been kind of bringing guests on and been a part of this community. I'm not just saying this stuff. Like, this is why I co-host with you. Congratulations. Like, that's I think a pretty monumental accomplishment. You've been doing this a while. I've been guesting for 4 or 5 years on this thing with you. So yeah. Job well done, my friend.
I appreciate that. Kind words. I didn't want to bring up
I know you didn't want to make a big deal of it.
Yeah, Pollock gave me a hard time on 400 that I didn't make a big deal out of it. So he'll probably give me a hard time for this, but I appreciate that. I love doing it. I get to do it with Toby on Tuesday and you on Thursdays, which makes it the easiest job I've got. And then I mix in other guests. So it's awesome. I love what we got going here. It's a great show. So thanks. And you said you've been guesting with me for a long time. So that's what made the transition to Thursday night pretty simple for the two of us. So I appreciate that. And hopefully 500 more to go. We'll see how it goes. But it's a passion project is the best way I can put it. So we'll see. Maybe we'll have like episode 520 something in Arizona. We'll see how that one goes.
And we'll have to count that out, but something like that. Absolutely.
Before we get into the recent news and everything, just because I know we've done it before, the special isn't there anymore, but do you want to mention anything else about a special event in November?
With First Pitch, I do want to mention golf. If anyone plays golf, we're going to really start ramping this up and get details. We've got a handful of folks who are interested in playing golf with us Thursday during the day, November 3rd at First Pitch Arizona. This is kind of on the side from the event, but if any listeners out there are going to First Pitch Arizona, obviously let us know. We'll hang out, that sort of thing. If on top of that you want to play golf, let both of us know. We're going to start organizing that here pretty soon, but tentatively plan for midday Thursday for 18 holes before the actual event kicks off Thursday night. So I'm excited, man. It's only like 2.5 months away. So
I mean, we
kind of do have to get going on planning because people are going to do flights and that sort of thing. I know you booked your return flight. I still have the one way.
Southwest has another sale going on right now. So I'd recommend, I got basically my way back for less than $100. So it's pretty nice setup right now. And I'll be getting in Wednesday night. I don't know if people don't care, but what I'm trying to get at is we'll golf Thursday late morning, early afternoon, like Ryan said. And then I'm pretty sure we'll have a welcome reception at a ballpark. So you'll get to play golf and watch a baseball game with a bunch of baseball addicts. It's going to be an absolute blast. So it's like the bet. It's too good. I'm already excited thinking about it. And it is just right around the corner, which is crazy to think about.
And there's a potential. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword because they had to move the Fall Stars game from Saturday night to Sunday night because of this. But MLB announced the postseason schedule. And if the World Series goes that far, game 6 and 7 will be during first pitch. And that
I will miss the Fall Stars. It is what it is. It'll still be a blast, but
still get the home run derby, but
which will be cool because it's the first year for it. So that'll be pretty awesome too. So we'll have more to talk about on that. But yeah, like we said before, if you have any questions, obviously Ryan's the veteran. I've been there 1 year. I can still help you. I'm going to help Ryan ramrod the golf. So if you have any questions, ask one of us. We'll make it happen for you, but it'll be a lot of fun. All right. Recent news. Let's start with the big elephant in the room. Fernando Tatis Jr. got popped for steroids. One of the worst excuses I've ever heard of how he got used steroids. Like, come on, you got to be better than this. A cream for ringworm, which I'm sorry, you can go to the local store and get it off the shelf. It's called Lotrimin. It doesn't have steroids in it. That's what the doctors will tell you to get. So I don't buy it one bit. He's going to be out for the rest of this year. I found out last night, surprisingly, that the playoff games count towards the suspension, which I think is kind of wonky there. So he'll probably miss about 30 to 40 games next season, give or take. We'll see how that plays out. Obviously he's gone for this year, but how do you approach this going forward, Ryan?
Yeah, so we had a little discussion on this, and yeah, like, I mean, it's kind of besides the point now. It's been a little bit older news, but like with Tatis, you're thinking about next year in terms of not just like redraft, which, you know, degenerates like us did our draft last night, but for keeper leagues and that sort of thing. And this did come up last night when we did our 2023 redraft. Tatis went 47th overall. So beginning of the fourth round and 15-teamer, Zach Waxman bit the bullet and took Tatis. And yeah, I mean, we were talking about it's a max of 32 games minus whatever the Padres do in the postseason. So if they go the distance in a couple of playoff series, like maybe you're only missing a couple of weeks of Tatis, and Tatis in the fourth round is like a bargain. But I don't think, I mean, for next year for keeper, that sort of thing, I'm not really knocking Tatis from a per game basis. I'm interested to see what he does with the shoulder, which now that he knows we're not going to see him until April or May of next season, is he going to get surgery to clean that up? What's going to happen there? But I mean, fourth round, like Waxman was a little bit timid with the pick, like he wasn't super thrilled to make it, but that could absolutely pay off in the early fourth round. So interesting news. Like I mean obviously you're not using Tatis. It sucks to cut him if you drafted him and redraft and held him for this long. Ha-Seong Kim will just stay at shortstop and Padres, like not much newsworthy there, but just thought it was interesting that Tatis went 47th last night in the draft.
Yeah, and we'll do more draft recapping, but since we're talking about him, I just want to ask you, because I know like there has been chatter around Twitter, like where should he go next year? I thought maybe round like 6-ish. Where like, so he's basically off the board for me, is what it comes down to.
He would be.
I'm still worried about the shoulder. I would love to see him get surgery right now. Like, I'm still worried about that thing. So where would you have had him going in that draft?
I mean, I probably would have taken him 5th or 6th, similar to you, which means I'm probably not getting him. Like, I think roughly 4th round is where you're going to see him next year. So I thought last night's pick from Zach was more or less, I mean, one draft's going to be so different, more or less where I think Tatis will go next year. Obviously, so many question marks from now until next March, but it seemed about right.
Yep, lots of stuff to go till then. Yusei Kikuchi gets moved to the bullpen. We've gone over this up and down roller coaster, mainly down for Yusei Kikuchi of late, and now he goes to the bullpen. Ross Stripling returned from the IL, looked good again. It's like the Stripling effect. It's he's got to be efficient to go deep into the game, but he's done that this year. He's just not a big strikeout guy, but ratios are there. So he's locked in. Maybe some Mitch White. Any quick thoughts on Kikuchi going to the pen?
Addition by subtraction, right? So, like, yeah. I know, Bubba, you had a tweet out, you know, imagine starting Kikuchi in, or fabbing Kikuchi or whatever it was. I will admit, I had Kikuchi in my main. I bought into those kind of two starts coming off of the IL with the improved control, and obviously that fell apart. So Kikuchi's obviously not roster worthy in the bullpen. Like, that's not really like an arsenal that I think is going to play up well in the bullpen. It's not like a Matt Brash or something where you got elite stuff and you just need to harness it by going all out. Ross Stripling's locked in, like you said, and he's been just fantastic. And Mitch White is the, I guess, quote unquote winner. I know we kind of hyped up Mitch White. We talk about him a lot just because he kind of goes in and out of the Toronto rotation. But lately, man, just not many strikeouts at all. Like, it's been kind of brutal. You're just kind of rostering him in hopes that Toronto's offense goes off and Mitch White lasts five innings, because you're not getting much else there right now.
Yeah. Real quick, one reason I love the podcast is I can clarify my tweets for people out there, because that did stir up some fun that night. I tweeted always, that. But the reason I said that is twofold. We already did the two-step with Kikuchi when he had Oakland and someone else, and he got shelled by Oakland out the gate. So that was lesson one. Lesson two is we keep harping on the fact that not all two starts are created equally. Now, given in a 15-team league, I get it's different. Like, you're really at the mercy of anybody with a pulse at this point of the season. But that was my point of my tweet. I was just like, come on, we've done this roller coaster before. But I get both sides. I just want to clarify that for a quick second there. Eduardo Escobar, it's been a rough go. Rough go for Eduardo in New York. Now he goes to the IL. But one of many prospects that are getting called up these days, Brett Beatty, gets called up. We saw him in the fall league last year, some mixed reactions on him, but 19 homers in AAA this year, hitting over 300. Looks like he might get a little run here for a bit.
Yeah, and that's the kind of prospect, again, to kind of take this back to first pitcher. So those are the types of prospects you see in these fall league games. So you're going to see this, you know, type of talent if you come out in November. But yeah, so like Eduardo Escobar, really a rough season. Had him in TGFBI and just a good reason to cut him now. Brett Beatty's been hitting the cut. I know we're in like two or three game sample mode, but homered on his first swing, which was really cool in the majors. And I think it was over like 110 miles an hour, and exit velocity's there. He's averaging like 96 miles an hour off the bat through his first few games, and that's going to play up. So it's going to be interesting what Brett Beatty goes for, but in Fab this weekend, because I think he's locked in. I mean, the Mets are contending. If Brett Beatty's hitting, Brett Beatty's going to play, and Escobar's out for quite a while. So you've got the playing time safety. You've got, in very small sample, that Mets exit velo that a lot of folks like to cite when we just don't have much else. And you have the AAA performance that he put together. At HQ, Brett Beatty was our number 24. We did a midseason top 50 fantasy list about 2 weeks ago, and Brett Beatty was number 24 on that. He entered the season number 35 prospect on our HQ 100. So he's ascending and hitting the Mets at the right time.
Nice. Yeah, it's one of those things. Will he get to keep the role? If he produces, he will. That's the way I look at it. So with like 6, kind of 7 weeks left in the season, it's time to start taking some chances, folks. So this is definitely a strong one to take one on. Aledmys Diaz goes to the IL for the Astros, and it stinks because I picked him up over the last couple of weeks, because it used to be the theory, okay, he's a platoon guy, hits lefties well, but he's platoon, short side of platoon. He's been playing every day and playing very well. That's why I was picking him up in pretty much all 12-team and deepers. And now he goes to the IL for a bit, and it kind of just makes him a drop again, which is a shame. So what do you got on Aledmys Diaz?
Yeah, it's like the worst possible timing. I'll admit, I was a little bit lazy in my Fab column with Diaz, just kind of writing. Oh, he snuck up on me. Like, he's just been so mediocre for so long and not really playing all the time. But that changed recently. Like, the last month, Diaz was hitting 300, four homers with really good counting stats in Houston. So that timing's rough. It's like groin strain, and it doesn't really sound like there's a timetable right now. So that, for me, means a cut. You've got like Chaz McCormick filling in center field. He's been playing center the last couple nights. Had a huge day today, or on Thursday.
Everybody did.
Thursday night. Everybody, yeah, they had 21 runs. 21 runs for Houston, including Bregman with the double dong in a bag, which
we'll get to, double dong in a bag.
That was impressive. And so, yeah, anyone who plays regularly in Houston, that's a buying opportunity just because of the lineup context. And your boy, Trey Boo Boo, Trey Mancini, I think it's just one less obstacle for him to be locked in at DH. So I really like that for Mancini's playing time safety.
100%. He went deep today, and it's been a bummer because he's platooning. It's an embarrassment of riches for the Astros, obviously. And, you know, they could take their time with Diaz because they've almost probably locked up the AL West by now. So it's just kind of like get to the playoffs, get him back for a platoon role and see where it goes. So, yeah, is what it is on that one. Joey Votto, season's over, shoulder injury. They said he couldn't handle it anymore. It was time to have surgery. And that's a massive bummer because I'll let you get to your bullet point here, but I agree. I was with you on this roller coaster. Like, and this past week when I recapped Fab, like I dropped Votto everywhere, not knowing about this already, but I kept looking at his numbers. He's hitting like 212 and like the power was limited. And now it makes sense. He had a shoulder injury for crying out loud. And I guess the moral of the story is that's a lot of these guys. I know, Ryan, you wrote an article a month or so ago about potential injuries. Like, we don't know. We're speculating on injuries. And here's one right in the open for us. And just goes to show you, it's like, sometimes you see the stats are bad and then you just got to pull the pin and go. I wish I would have done it sooner now, but again, I didn't know. So yeah, this one stings.
A 61 point drop in batting average from last season for Joey Votto, 36 homers last year, 11 homers this year. I will admit I was completely wrong on Joey Votto. I bought into the fact that this was a calculated change, this being last year's performance, a calculated change to hit for more power, be a little bit more aggressive. And it worked like a charm. And Joey Votto is a Hall of Fame player. He's not just someone who kind of runs into hot streaks and that sort of thing. When Joey Votto said he changed his approach, and we saw those in the skills last season, I bought in. This sounds bad. It's not nice to know that he's been playing hurt, and maybe that explains a lot of it. Like, maybe that makes me feel a little bit better. I don't know. But I still drafted him and held on to him for way too long. And that was kind of the issue with Votto too, is you drafted him and he was in your lineup, at least for me.
Yeah.
At least until like a couple weeks ago in mixed labor, 15 teamer, he was in my lineup every single day. And mm-hmm. It was one of those guys where you think is a set and forget based on what he did last year. And Votto has been absolutely not that. So tough way to end the season for Votto. He'll be 39 next year. So let's see how this twilight of his career pans out.
Yeah, he's still under contract next year, and then there's a club option for 2024, so we still might have two more years of Votto. I don't see him retiring, obviously, but you got to see how the shoulder injury sometimes that zaps power for at least a year to get things back, and then for an older guy, who knows how that's gonna zap the power. So it's a bummer. Like you said, he's a first, like, I want him to be the commissioner of baseball someday. Like, the dude is amazing. He's just an amazing person for baseball. So we'll see how it goes, but a big bummer there. Walker Buehler, season is over with an elbow surgery. Now, this one's weird, Ryan, for a couple reasons. He's been shut down for a while. Now he's having elbow surgery. Like, this could have happened when he got shut down, and they haven't been specific about the elbow surgery, but it, like, sounds like Tommy John, but they won't say what kind of surgery it is. So this, like, obviously we don't – well, we did draft, but you don't really have to draft soon, so that'll help to have some more info. But this is a very, very – weird situation, because you figure if he's having elbow surgery, they would have done it like a month ago or something. Like, this is a weird one for me.
Spot on, like, on all those points. I'm very concerned about the vagueness that of the surgery. I don't think it's Tommy John. If it's Tommy John, it's Tommy John. There was some kind of speculation out there that it was just bone chips, and bone chips is, you know, removal of bone chips is the least invasive type of surgery, but this sounds more severe than that, but it's so nebulous that we don't really know. And like you said, Bubba, what happened in these last couple months to now trigger this surgery? Mm-hmm. So just really concerning. Like, and man, Walker Buehler was late first round pick this year, and that is the landmine to avoid whenever you can. And no one saw this coming. Like, a lot of people were down on Buehler as a first round pick, maybe like a mid threes ERA guy. But from a volume standpoint, Walker Buehler, 180 innings in 2019, 2020 season, kind of nuts. 2021, he had over 200 innings, and all of a sudden, like, a lot of stuff's in jeopardy. So Buehler did not go in the first seven rounds, for what it's worth, of our degenerate draft last night.
Yeah, he was one of the many that did not go that we talked about for a while afterwards. But at least there's some good justification because we have no clue. Zero. Like, he legit could miss all next season if we find out it's a certain surgery. Yeah. I doubt it. Like you said, if it's Tommy John, people would say Tommy John now. So they think they would have said it. But it's still just so weird how they didn't really say much. But they have tons of options in L.A.
So say, you probably don't feel too bad for L.A. I think they'll be just fine.
Yeah, they'll be just fine. Here. Yeah, tons of options. They'll be just fine. He can carry his ring on his right hand if he has to. It'll be okay. Mike Trout. This was weird, Ryan, because it was like, I think, 2 weeks ago maybe when he went down. And we were like, this is so vague. There's like no timetable. This could be like a career life, like career threatening thing. We didn't know what was going on. And we were like, okay, let's wait before you drop him. Well, I hope you didn't drop him because he's supposed to come back on Friday. Still, it's such a weird thing that I sadly wouldn't be shocked if he hits like two at bats on Friday and they're like, he's down again. Like, I don't know what is going on, but he's supposed to be back Friday. And that's the good part.
Yeah. Like, I held on to try, and actually, and it was funny. So like, yeah, with the vagueness of like career ending this, I was wondering like, is Mike Trout a drop? We might've even talked about that a few weeks ago when this news kind of hit, and 100% owned in TGFBI, 100% main, 100% in 12 teamers. So nobody has dropped Mike Trout. I have Mike Trout in the main. I'm thrilled to put him in for this weekend. I actually did that just before we started recording for the weekend, but dude, like, it just sounds, I'm just so skeptical still. I'm so skeptical in terms of how quickly this news came out. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. Like, if Trout's in the lineup, you're playing him. But I'm excited to put him in, but I'm not gung-ho about the rest of the season. Like, it just seems like something where he's going to re-aggravate something, or, you know, he's changed his whole routine around to accommodate this in recent weeks. And I don't know. It's just weird. It's weird news. Like, for as weird and down as the Buehler news was, this is just as weird, but up for Trout, I guess. But it could always turn this time next week on next week's podcast.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The A's have been making some moves here. They're bringing up some young ball players, just DFAing some guys. It's kind of fun to watch. Jed Lowry earlier in the week. Elvis Andrus, a little more validity in like DC formats just because he's like your fourth shortstop. But he got released a couple days ago, at least maybe yesterday on Wednesday. And the White Sox already picked him up because, you know, they need a shortstop. So any interest in him with Chicago?
No, I mean, Andrus will play, I guess.
Better than Lourie Garcia.
He'll supplant the combination, right, of Lourie Garcia and like Romy Gonzalez. He'll play. Not excited. He's not an ad. Like, yes, it's technically a park upgrade. It's a lineup upgrade, but it's still Elvis Andrus. Just so, he actually homered like the day he got released, or the day before.
Exactly.
Nice.
I saw a lot of very clever people use the same thing. Elvis has left the building. So that was a fun one for people there.
Damn.
That's bad. Carlos Carrasco to the IL. Bummer. Anytime Carlos is hurt is because of the story, the person he seems to be, with an oblique injury, and the reports aren't great. Like, they're kind of saying it's, like, there's really no timetable. It's one of those kind of obliques where it's really fuzzy right now. So he's going to the IL, might be a drop, seriously, in all things considered. But David Peterson is supposed to pitch in the doubleheader on Saturday. So he's filling in that spot. And I loved Peterson in 15-team formats before he got taken out of the rotation. He made a pitch mix change, still walked a few too many guys, but the strikeouts went up in a big way. So with such limited options in starting pitching and deeper formats, I think he's very viable come this weekend.
Yeah, Peterson's absolutely viable. Didn't pitch that well out of the bullpen, oddly, but it was two appearances. Like, you're looking at really small samples. So Peterson's very interesting to me. Another one who's interesting, and Taijuan Walker is hurt as well. It sounds like he might make his next start, but like, Trevor Williams also comes into play. Trevor Williams has not given up an earned run since July 2nd. So he's pitched really well in the bullpen of moderate length. So yes, in 15 teamers, I'm looking at Peterson and Williams, whoever kind of wins out on that spot. 12 teamers, probably neither of them, but 15s, it's just so brutal at the end of the pitching pool that either of those guys are fine ads. And I think they'll both go long enough and pitch for a good team. So that's all you can ask
for. No doubt about it. Brian Hayes to the IL. It's just a shame every year, it seems like, with this guy. You're just hoping for it, and he just can't stay healthy. He goes to the IL. Rodolfo Castro probably takes the cake, but don't call him. He only has his phone when he's on the field. So that's a problem. But yeah, it's a bummer. There's not a whole lot to love with Pittsburgh. Brian Reynolds is heating up, but Hayes was a guy we were interested in, and now it's another kind of lost season with Brian.
Lost season. The Pirates lineup just gets that much worse. I think it was it Eckersley? One of the visiting comments, I think it was Dennis Eckersley, just kind of went off on how bad Pittsburgh's lineup is, and rightfully going off against ownership for not spending and all that. So that was interesting. Yeah. Not interested in Rodolfo Castro. The cell phone thing was just bizarre. It was, I mean, MLB investigated, like, did he use the phone during the, like, that's the big thing. Like, did he actually use the phone during the game?
That's what I was wondering.
You know, gain an advantage, like Astros 2022 here, but I guess they found not, and he just has his phone.
They looked at the win-loss record and his batting average, and like, yeah, no, he wasn't using anything.
Yeah. So, no, should not be added on any team. That's it. It just makes Pittsburgh, like, that much more juicy to stream against, even though I think they scored 8 runs tonight against the Red Sox. But
yeah, 8-2, Brubaker dominated, 7 shutout. It was beautiful. Beautiful. Because the Red Sox, they struggle a lot these days. It's pretty bad. Ramon Laureano to the IL and Brandon Marsh, so 2 outfielders going to the IL. I'm going to package them together. Laureano was showing some signs of life, but still it was what it was. Brandon Marsh was finally getting a chance in that. Did you see Brandon Marsh's injury?
I did not.
So he was going to, like, jump to the fence to catch a fly ball. And when he came down, he saw, like, both his legs kind of buckle. So he hurt his ankle on one and his knee on the other. It was a rough one.
Not good. Similar deal to Pittsburgh. Like, an easy lineup to stream against gets that much easier. Like, you're right, Laureano wasn't great this year, but good homer and stolen base production. But you're not looking in Oakland for anything at this point.
Pretty much. Tyler Molly left his last start. Velocity was down. Shoulder was bugging him. They did an MRI. Everything was supposedly structurally looks good. Still don't know if he's going to make his next start. I'll throw a bullpen this week. But anytime you hear shoulder, it's never good in my mind. So I'm very, very concerned with Tyler Molly, who's made 3 starts since joining the Twins. And everyone was thinking he was one of the biggest winners of the trade deadline outside like Luis Castillo and company.
Yeah, and like one of the things I always think about with guys who have a recent medical injury and gets, you know, recent medical pass and then they get traded, I'm like, well, theoretically, like the Twins did their due diligence and checked out Molly and, you know, like what they saw, doesn't look to be the case. And so even if Molly, like, yeah, this injury doesn't, at least the Twins are spinning it so that it's not like he, you know, yeah, like you said, he might make his next start even. But I'm talking this away for 2023. Like, I'm really concerned about just shoulders in general, but anyone who kind of has recurring shoulder things throughout the season. We have, I think, a listener question related to someone else with a shoulder injury later on. That just scares me, not only for this year, but for next year as well. So never been a huge Tyler Molly guy. Leaving Cincinnati was great, but not if the shoulder's not right.
Yep, 100% with you on that one. And there's some quick hitters here because I kind of mentioned it earlier with Beatty. You know, last week, Vaughn Grissom got called up and everyone's like, oh, this is like the last big prospect to make a splash this season. And then it's like literally by Wednesday, we've got Brett Beatty's up. We already talked about him. Shay Langeliers gets called up by the A's and all these moves they've been making. Langeliers has been crushing it in the minor. He's a catcher. He's been DHing pretty much every day, hitting 7th. He had a double and a run scored today. He's already got a home run throughout the minors this year. He had 19 home runs, even stole 5 bases while hitting .283. So, you know, in a world where catchers are catchers, this seems like a fun pickup this week.
2 catcher leagues, anyone with a pulse in playing, I say it all the time, is worth it. So Langeliers has the prospect pedigree. We liked him as a prospect. We've got him as he cracked our top 100 entering the season. And so for a catcher, that's fantastic. I am adding that to our baseball podcast bingo card of this is the last chance for this A prospect or this villain. I'm guilty of it. I say it all the time. Like when Vinny P came up, oh, this is the last chance you'll get to. There's always someone else.
Yeah, it's crazy. Esteban Florial, big time prospect in the Yankee system. Like he was one of the guys rumored, like, hey, if they make a big trade, Esteban Florial's got to be in it. And they got to keep him, so on and so forth. Dude had 14 homers and 32 steals in the minors this year, hitting .286. They need some serious help because Aaron Hicks ain't cutting it. Obviously, they traded Joey Gallo, who's revived his life in L.A. Florial still has not had a hit yet in his short time in the bigs, but does that kind of somewhat power and speed combo interest you this weekend?
For like very, very short term, maybe with these prospects, I look, and this is like the big difference between him and Langeliers, who I think is going to play, and Beatty, who's going to play. Like that Yankee outfield is going to be very crowded once like Bader comes back, once Stanton comes back. So I just worry about the playing time on a team that is struggling, but is, you know, has postseason aspirations and that sort of thing, and will probably still win the division. So I just don't think the playing time is going to be there right now for Florial. Yeah, like the stolen base upside. I get why you would make the bid, but I wouldn't go crazy at all here.
And the last one I'm going to talk about, because I didn't even notice he got called up when it took place, because I'm not a prospect guy to begin with, but I playing DFS, you start seeing this name pop up, and you're like, huh, who's this $2,000 guy that keeps producing over and over again? Kerry Carpenter got called up by the Tigers, and usually, you know, we're hearing about Torkelson and Riley Green, and again, not a prospect guy, so I don't hear about Carpenter, but he's hitting 300 with two home runs already in a short sample, 32% K rate, but 16% walk rate, so a little good and a little bad. But in the minors this year, 30 home runs to go with three steals, hitting 313. And I heard some prospect guys, James Anderson's of the world, the Welsh, they said the power is legit. Like, this is legit power from this guy. So, you know, he could be one, as we talk about all these prospects that people will bid on this week, he might fly a little more under the radar, if that makes sense. So this could be a fun one because they have no reason not to play him in Detroit.
And that's exactly, like, we talk a lot about, you know, players on bad teams, like, you get that playing time. And that is interesting, like you said, with Anderson and the Welsh believing in the power. That's great, because at two levels this year, Double A and Triple A, Carpenter hit over 300, cut the K rate down in half from Double A to Triple A. So, like, the plate skills, in addition to that plus power, the plate skills are improving as he goes up levels. And like you said, Bubba is probably going to play for Detroit as they play out the string. So, sneaky. Yeah. And Carpenter's can hit. I don't know if there's any relation to Matt, but maybe this is him reincarnated and surprising people.
That could be fun. I did have one more bit of news that I forgot to put on the outline, but Luis Robert got a cortisone shot in his wrist because it's been bugging him and he has not felt good. They still won't put him on the IL though. So Ryan, it's hard to drop Lou Bob, but what are you doing with him? Because it's just a constant, like, fallback. I'm holding him for now, but it's getting to that point of the year. It's like, I can't keep holding dead weight type thing.
I have him in TGFBI. I'm just holding and benching. Yeah. That's until he play. And even if, like, it would have to be like a Monday or a Friday where he's in the lineup for me to put Robert back in, just because, it's just been a disaster of a season. Did get drafted in the second round of last night's draft by someone I might know, but
some goof. Yeah, that's some guy. I don't know what he was thinking, but we'll get to that. All right, let's get to our weekly matchup game. And surprise, surprise, we tied again this week. So 6-6 on the year. But unlike usual, you won the hitting, I won the pitching. So I'll let you have the floor if you want to recap last week for us.
Yeah, we're tied, and this is starting to get so we've got like maybe
we put a stake on this. We decided.
We mentioned golf at the top at first pitch. Whoever wins this game between us gets a free round of golf on the other. So this is starting to get a little, I don't know. I bent the rules a little bit this week with my pitcher
pick.
Yeah, you did. I hope you're not too pissed, man.
I'm glad if I lose, it's not by the difference of the number. It's just overall.
It's starting to get a little, I don't know, a little divide in the room here. But last week, both of our hitters mashed. It was great. I mean, you took Emmanuel Rivera, who I think hit two homers.
And he didn't even play Friday.
And did not play Friday. So it was not looking good for you Friday night. Yes. But hit two homers, but still lost to Lamont Wade, who crushed. So I took the hitter side 10-8. And for listeners out there, we're just adding up runs, ribbies, and hits. And so whoever gets the most of those on the hitting side gets the win. So I won 10-8, but a strong showing by both of us, if I do say so myself. Pitcher side, you snipe you with Dane Dunning, who got five strikeouts. I went back to the Ian Anderson well, who got four strikeouts. Pitching was really rough last week, a little bit better this week, but you took the cake on strikeouts. So we are tied 6-6 in match play, like hitters and pitchers combined, as we go down the stretch here. So
yeah, it's a wild one. It's a very, very wild one. And like you said, we got a few more weeks to go here. This week, we have a weekend of Coors between the Giants and the Rockies. We have four games between the Phillies and the Mets, but as our normal thing, it's 50% or less in 12-team NFBC OCs, and there really weren't any Phillies or Mets available in less than 50%, at least that were worth rostering, so that was part of a conundrum as well. But when you look at the HQ weekly weekend action here, some of your best matchups, you got San Diego versus Washington, you got the Giants versus Colorado, of course. But yeah, San Diego, Washington, San Diego has the best matchup on paper this weekend. It's funny, like the Giants have the second best, but you look at Colorado and they have one of the worst, well, not the worst, but like a red one, and they're still in Coors Field. So that says a lot right there.
Yeah. That says a lot about their mm-hmm. own lineup. So, I liked your angle on taking Colorado. So I'll steal your thunder a little bit. You took Longoria, right? So that's,
yep.
That makes sense to me.
Real quick, I took Longo. I was between him and Lamont Wade, but it's two righties and a lefty. It's two righties and a lefty, and Longo will face righties and lefties where Wade might sit where it's a lefty. And I lost by two last week without playing one game, so I'm not doing that again out the gate.
Yeah. I thought about going with one of the four-game series, but there just wasn't. I think it was, like you said, Phillies Mets, and it was
It was platoon guys.
It was platoon guys because their good hitters were not 50% rostered or less. So I went with Kyle Farmer, Cincinnati Goat. They're not at home, but they get three against Pittsburgh. And whenever you do anything against Pittsburgh, it's worth looking at. So it's Bryce Wilson, Tyler Beattie, Zach Thompson, nothing special. Kyle Farmer's playing every day and hitting okay. He's hitting .293 over the last month with really good contact. The power hasn't been there lately, but not too worried about it. Just kind of banking on regular playing time, running a few hits and runs in RBI. So Kyle Farmer for me.
I like that one. If you're on the pitching side of things, some of the best pitching matchups for the week, Padres versus the Nationals. You got the Dodgers, Marlins, the Braves versus the Astros. That says a lot about the Braves pitching staff this week, and even Tampa Bay versus Kansas City. So there's some really good pitching matchups, a lot more than when it comes to the hitting side of things. So what are you looking at this weekend on the mound?
This is where I bent the rules. So Dustin May.
It was legal. It's legal. But
Dustin
wow.
May is 1% rostered in 12-teamers. So somehow Dustin May was picked in a 12-team.
He was drafted, yeah. Season.
Yeah. So Dustin May will be eligible in NFBC this weekend. And I know I just kind of said put this on the bingo card, but I can say with pretty good confidence, Dustin May will be the best pitcher available on Fab the rest of the season. If I'm wrong on that, I'm wrong. But like that's somebody, if you need pitching, you are opening up the wallet for, in my opinion. Just the way, and we've talked about this a little bit on the pod, the way that LA has treated Dustin May in his rehab outings, the length of those rehab outings, I think he's going to get length and go long enough to get wins, 5-6 innings for an LA team that just seems to be doing everything right. So Dustin May is my pick. I didn't even look at who they're playing until after I picked him, but they're playing the Marlins, which just makes
one of the best matchups
that
of the
much
week,
more yeah. juicy. So I'm feeling good about my Dustin May pick. A little dirty. I feel a little dirty. I might have to shower before I do it, but I'm feeling good about it.
I'm just going to let you guys behind the curtain of the podcast for a minute here. Ryan usually picks first each week and says, okay, he either picks pitcher or hitter. And I was actually not as lazy today, so it wasn't a pick yet. So I texted Ryan. I said, hey, Ryan, do you want pitcher or hitter first? He goes, I'll take pitcher. So he tells me he takes his pitcher pick, and I go and open it up, and I see who it is. I'm like, you dirty, dirty dog. It was legal, though. It was legal. Completely legal. But I was just like, oh, okay.
There was process behind it. I took a hitter first last week. So
I know. I'm joking. So, it was just funny. I was like, I wouldn't even have – I would have forgot about May. So you deserve it. It's all good. But, yeah, I want Aaron Civale. Yeah, that's what I'm going to laugh so hard if you lose this one. I took Aaron Civale. He picked up 10 Ks in his last start, his second start since coming off the IL. You know, he's usually good for about a K an inning. Like 10 Ks is through the roof. But K an innings gets the White Sox, a struggling White Sox team. There's actually, compared to last week, a handful of options that were actually at least available on the wire. I wrote them down. So Civale, Ashcraft, Caprillion, Peterson, Glenn Otto. Not really in love with many of them. So I went with Civale, hoping he can – give me at least a K an inning, and hopefully he throws like seven innings, because then May will throw five, and I cross my fingers and I win. That's what I'm hoping for.
I've got a confession, Savali related confession to make. I fabbed Savali in TGFBI Sunday night. Did not put him in my lineup until it was too late on Monday. So I fabbed him, game. And he's on my bench. He had the Monday morning game, and I don't know. I was at work and just I didn't even realize they were playing in the morning. So like that's on me. Maybe I need to do my lineups Sunday nights, but like that killed me when I saw he was already pitching games. And was on my bench. And then of all people, Aaron Savali had 10 strikeouts. Like that got me on Monday, I will admit.
Well, let's hope you get got twice so that I can beat you versus Dustin. it's TGFBI, at least free league. It's not like I'm saying for your main. So at least it's TGFBI. All right. And I do want to shout out you followers that like tweet us updates on our guys. I think it's actually pretty cool because like
it
we
is.
Just do it for fun. Awesome. We do it for fun just to kind of give you guys an idea if you want to pick guys up for the weekend. And it's hilarious. Like I'll be out doing something. I get a tweet about someone hitting a home run and then Ryan's guy gets a home. So it's pretty cool. So I appreciate you guys having fun with it like we are. It's a pretty cool deal. All right. Degeneracy time. Let me pull up. Let me see if I can do this like I did earlier. Let's share the screen. Well, we'll set the table. Last night, on August 17th, 2022, Ryan, myself, and 13 other very talented, probably more talented than me, yes, more talented than me, fantasy baseball players, decided it was a good idea, thanks to our buddy Rob DiPietro, the Deadpool hitter, to start a 15-team NFBC Draft Champions League that will count towards the overall, so it is real money involved here, for the 2023 season. We did 7 rounds. We did it on Zoom. Go listen to the Deadpool Hitter podcast. It is on there. Really good stuff. I know James Anderson already wrote an article kind of recapping his thoughts on it. There'll be more content. I might even write something about it too, so I can go kind of deeper in my analysis. We'll see how big of a fool I make about when I relive my picks here in a minute. But it was a blast. Literally, we both thought it would take forever. I won't steal all your thoughts, but it went quick. I was actually like, I want to stop because it's like, let's just call it good because I'm not as prepared, but we probably could have picked for another couple hours. It was a lot of fun. The juices were flowing again. Draft season is the best time of the year for a reason. I thought we were idiots. We are, but it was awesome. So what were your thoughts before we kind of get down to breaking it down?
Just that it was so fun to be drafting's great, but just the live Zoom part of it, just hanging out and kind of shooting the shit with 13 other people like from different time zones. And it was a really fun time. Like it was like a very quick 2 hours. It was just, you know, kind of busting chops over picks and Bubba, you were saying like, oh crap, after every single pick, and then when you didn't, it was like, man, oh, that wasn't a good pick. But it was just those kind of like being in the draft room again, even though like, and we'll talk about prep and picks and that sort of thing, like the prep could have been a little bit better on my part, but
me too.
You're drafting blind, and that's kind of the fun of it too. But we are playing this out, so like you said, Rob DiPietro set it up. Believe it's a $150 buy-in.
It better be.
So yeah, at least I hope it's not like he comes out like four, you know.
Yeah, the 400,
whatever
they call him.
Yeah. 400 and that sort of thing. But yeah, so we're gonna do the other 43 rounds at some other point. But
in November, yeah.
Just really fun to be able to kind of do this and just talk baseball for a night and kind of forget about other stuff. That's why we do this. To kind of hang out with other people and draft with them and compete. So it was a great time.
Yeah, I'll shamelessly say it. Like at first I was like, okay, I'll do it because A, I like hanging out with the people that were in there, and B, I'm like, it's August and this will give us content because it's tough to get content. That's all. I was just thinking, okay, I'll do it. It'll help me get ready for 2023, get my mind right. I had such a good time. I was like, I'm so glad I did it because it was awesome. The picture you put in the DM this morning of like the Zoom picture with all of us, it was like, that was so much fun. Like just looking at that picture, it was like everyone in there, it was a cool deal. So looking forward to doing it. It's one of those that I feel like I kind of want to do that more often with like, we don't have to do like full drafts, but like get whoever's in our leagues, like let's do an online one for a little bit. That was a lot of fun. So it was a good deal. Yep. All right. The process, the setup. Let me actually share the screen now. Make sure I hit the right buttons so you don't see everything I got going on. Where are you? Oh, don't do it. There we go. Now I got it. Yahtzee. All right.
Fads come and go. and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
That is the draft board. If you're on YouTube, you can zoom in or whatever. It's the best we could do. It's got everything. Shout out to Ryan Roof, who actually color coded everything like a maniac. That was awesome to see as well.
With future free agent designation. Yeah, like that's awesome. That's some next level stuff and stuff, honestly, that I didn't realize a few of these guys were free agents next year. It's like,
yeah, it was another eye-opening experience about how underprepared I was for this draft. But we'll start off with this. How did you prepare? Because I laughed and I expected it, because there's like the Weimers of the world, the Slacks, a lot of really smart people that always have their SGPs and all these things. And some of them actually made SGPs based on the 2022 season. I'm like, you guys are maniacs. So how did you go about this?
So I'm part maniac, I guess. So I still had my 2022 preseason draft sheet. I have it in Google. So it's funny how like that thing lives on my computer. It's up on my screen constantly from like November to March, and you never see it again until the following draft season. So I fired that thing back up. And what I did was I just put, and we were talking about this with, you know, as a group after the draft last night, and Jenny Butler, who was in the draft, who picked ninth, did something very similar. So what I did is I just took the average of year-to-date production with a preseason projection and averaged those out, threw those in my SGP sheet from draft season, and it gave me some numbers. So I felt like that was at least some approximate. I had like 2-3 hours to prep. So that's what I did. Me being kind of the numbers guy, the database guy, that was my approach. And I thought it was pretty good. Like Aaron Judge came out so far ahead just because this season's just so ridiculous. So I didn't just draft straight based off of that, but I thought it was a pretty good way to kind of take into account this season, but also not go too much into the recency bias and take that preseason projection, which is more of like a kind of baseline level skill before 2022. So that's what I did. How did you, I'm guessing you didn't go all the way into SGP and do all that.
No, these numbers aren't my game. That's one thing I've always wanted to do. Not my forte. That's why I love doing this show with you, because you can put the board together and I can read a board and we can have some fun with it, but I can't do that. So what I did is, it was, in reality, it's kind of close to what you guys did. Yours is much more accurate and more in-depth, but I went to the Razzball Player Rater and I printed out like the top 200 on the Player Rater so I could see who was playing well, obviously, compared to others. But then I also printed out the March main event ADP. So I had a rough idea of like, these guys went here, maybe they underperformed, but like, don't forget about these guys type thing. So I was kind of, so that's why if we can't watch it, we got to see the Zoom. I'm literally shuffling, like literally the caveman in me. I'm shuffling through papers the entire time.
Some papers
like,
going, man.
So that's why I would say damn all the time, because literally I'd see a name and I'd go to Fangraphs, look at their profile. The second I would look at the profile, that guy'd get taken. I'm like, well, there goes that one. I just keep going through the list. So I had like a chicken scratch all over my papers and like crossing people out, putting stars by them and stuff. And that's what I was doing. It was the caveman in me, the joke I always make. It happened that night. But it was my way of looking at the current season, but also remembering the going into the season to kind of get a crossover and not forget, like, you know, Jazz Chisholm got taken. If you weren't looking, if you were just looking at the Player Rater, you would never see Jazz Chisholm, or there's a bunch of guys like that, we could say. So it kind of brings it all together. So it was a caveman way of trying to do something like you did, but we'll see. Like in the end, when I look at my first 7 rounds, it's a lot of similar things I do at draft season. And maybe I need to, I'll tell you when I'm done. I have a thought already that I need to already adjust for 2023 just by doing this first 7 rounds.
Cool.
But all right, I got some bullet points that Ryan put down, so I will tee them up for him, and then we can have some fun with it, Pierre, because it was fun. And this, if you're watching it on YouTube, or if you want to listen and then watch back, or it's tweeted out everywhere. Rob tweeted it out and stuff. The first seven rounds, you can see the yellow brick road that took place in the middle of round two. But overall, 11 teams had at least one starting pitcher through the first two rounds, and only one, that would be Steve Weimer, went pocket aces. Technically pocket aces, I guess, because Shohei Ohtani doesn't have to be. So it wasn't like a popular main event strategy, but at least everybody got an ace in the first two rounds. Actually, no, DiPietro took a reliever. We'll get to that in a minute. But what's your thoughts on this starting pitcher strategy? And I guess more importantly, Dylan Cease, Sandy Alcantara went 3-4, McClanahan went 5, Scherzer went 6, DeGrom went 7. So an interesting way to kind of look at starting pitching.
Yeah, and I think like, and I kind of made this remark during the thing, and definitely, Bubba, like you mentioned, listen to the Pull Hitter podcast if you're interested in kind of the in-draft banter. There was a lot of just busting each other down, but there was also at least some useful analysis throughout. But I made the point that this kind of felt like kind of a classic NFBC style draft where most people got their aces in the first two rounds. It looks like there's a clear kind of top three starting pitchers where like it was Garrett Cole, who you took fifth overall. We'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. Corbin Burns, and then like Cease Alcantara and McClanahan. Those are kind of your top guys, I think, that are going to be either in the first round or kind of late, that late wheel. And then it was, and I was part of this in the second round, everyone scrambling is not the right word, but everyone kind of going and getting their ace. So I, after you mentioned the first five or six guys, pitchers, Bubba, that got taken after DeGrom was taken in the second round, I took Aaron Nola, and I picked sixth. You picked fifth. So we were right next to each other, which was another kind of dynamic throughout. But yep. I took Aaron Nola right before Brandon Woodruff, Zach Wheeler, and Julio Urias in the second round. So I felt like the starting pitcher, quote unquote, ace tier was pretty deep in this draft, where if you wanted to build around a starting pitcher early, you had plenty of options pretty much no matter where you picked from. Because again, Jason DuPont took Urias at the late 2-3 wheel, and I think thought that was a fine pick. So kind of a classic spread of what you would normally see starting pitcher wise early in the draft.
Yeah, it was one of those that looking back on, and again, I'm trying not to go through my picks because we'll kind of go through our teams in a minute, but I was already mad right out the gate that I let you have the guy at six that I probably should have taken at five.
I was thanking you, man.
Yeah,
that was like, awesome.
Because I wanted J-Rod, and he went, I figured at least J-Ram or J-Rod, one of the two, because usually pitching goes so early and no one was taking him. I'm like, what in the world just happened here? So I went Cole, but we'll get to that in a minute. But then the beauty of this is just looking at the board and analyzing it, I really kick myself now because I could have been totally fine settling for Nola, Woodruff, Wheeler, over that. Like, Cole's great, don't get me wrong, he's awesome, but I had zero problems settling compared to taking Lou Bob. I could have had Acuna and Woodruff instead of, like, so looking at that combo, it's just like, ugh. But where I was going to go with this, and obviously this is past the first two rounds, pitching super deep. And like we talked about this last season, and obviously things can change, but you just look at these pitchers, and Kenyon with pick four, I thought did a really good job. He got a good power speed base with J-Rod, Riley, and Lindor. And then he went four pitchers, Musgrove, Manoa, Webb. We know what they are. We know who they are. Some young arms could take a step, then took a gamble on Tyler Glass now, which could pay off if he comes back healthy. So he could have four legit one or twos, like ace potential pitchers there with a good hitting base. Obviously, he's got some hitting work to do, but there's ways to do it if you don't take pitching early, is what I'm trying to say already. Yep. And obviously, things can change. The other thing I want to ask you, and it's going to be a fun offseason discussion, because you said there's kind of a clear top three. I think there's going to be so much movement, especially obviously if DeGrom keeps pitching like he is pitching, it finishes out the season, that's going to move up. But you can make arguments like Sandy Alcantara went fourth. You can easily be in a draft where he goes like ninth. Like they're like these, at least
in
for
terms
me,
of
like
starting, in terms starting of starting pitchers.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's so much fluidity, I think, throughout the like top maybe 12 of them, 10, 12 of them, that it's really interesting. And again, that could be to the point you can wait potentially.
In pretty much every round, there was a starting pitcher available that I liked. And so to your 100%. Point, Bubba, like starting pitching felt really deep. And we'll talk about probably at the end, guys pitchers who didn't even get drafted in these first seven rounds. There's a whole host of other arms that could have gone in this top 100. James Anderson built a team that it. I really like. Crushed he waited it. Until the fourth round to take Luis Castillo, who I would be fine. I know I'm a sucker for Luis Castillo, like he burned me last year, but Luis Castillo in Seattle, out of Cincinnati as a fourth round pick, like I thought that was fantastic. And there were just names like that, Joe Musgrove later in the fourth round, I would be fine with starting, building a rotation around. So yeah, that was a great point where starting pitching, it does look like is going to be pretty deep in pretty much any round. We'll see, like, if we went 12, 13 rounds, what does that starting pitcher pool start to look like? But in these first seven rounds last night, plus kind of a plethora of arms that did not get drafted, I felt fine taking pitchers in pretty much any round.
100% with you on that one. Speaking of pitchers, flip side, closers. We know, like, last year in early DCs, closers went super early, and the justification was, well, you can't make waiver moves, so you got to, like, hit on the couple guys and get some flyers and see how it goes. Well, with even the validity or the volatility of closers this year, they still went like wildfire in this draft. Yep. Through seven rounds, there was 10 closers before the pick 75. The first closer went off the board at 2.7 to Rob DiPietro, the trumpets began. Edwin Diaz going off the board, went before Jacob DeGrom, Aaron Nola, Woodruff, and company. So put that one in your pipe, was what DiPietro would basically tell you. Be a bunch of meatballs. I'm just imagining what he would say. But Edwin Diaz goes, but yeah, tons of closers went off the board. And it was one of those that I wouldn't say you were forced to take a closer, but I think you'd be feeling pretty uncomfortable if you don't have at least one closer right about now.
I was feeling the pressure. Feeling the pressure. And that was one of the things, I had no idea how this room would handle closers just because it is so insanely early. Although, Bubba, you made the point in the chat, it's not really that, because if how much is going to change from now to November in terms of like free agent signings and bullpens and that sort of thing, non-injury related, like obviously any of these guys could get hurt over the last month.
Things you can't foresee, basically.
Right. But like from a roster standpoint, I don't know how much is going to change for the kind of from this crazy degenerate draft to just normal degenerates that draft in November. I was just really curious to see how the closers would go. And I felt the heat. So I took, it's kind of funny, we can dive into this. Like our closers are totally different in terms of profile. I took Ryan Pressly in the fourth round, which is probably a round too soon, given in the fifth round a bunch of closers went. You took Devin Williams. That was actually the closer after Pressly. So we went Pressly Williams back to back. I'll speak for my pick. For me, Ryan Pressly's just like safe as hell. Like I can't see, and I double checked like what his contract is, because I don't know if he's on Houston next year, but he is on Houston next season.
They gave him an extension.
Yeah, that's right. But I just think that's super safe on a good team, and he's good. Yeah. So like that was good enough for me. Whereas your Devin Williams pick, I mean, Devin Williams could be the top closer next year, but I feel like that wasn't as safe, which doesn't mean it's a worse pick for sure. But
I was honestly surprised, because like I love, and this is where I might have, I guess, screwed up a little bit. I didn't see a world where he wasn't the Brewers closer, but the room we were in, a lot of people saw a world where he wasn't. Because when I made that pick, it was an interesting reaction that took place there.
It was.
And the thing I'll say, at least in this regard, and it could still burn me, obviously, because you need saves to win the overall. Maybe that's got to be a little more aggressive. We'll see. But he legit is one of the best relievers in all of baseball, period. So in a draft champions format, and again, I'm going to need saves, but just to kind of justify taking the gamble here, if he is the closer, he could be like one of the top closers in all of baseball. No questions asked. Secondly, even if he's not the closer, we saw even with Hader there, he was getting a boatload of wins. He still got a handful of saves, ratios, strikeouts. Like in a draft champions format where injuries are a mess, when you take gambles on late pitchers and you realize they really suck, why did I have them? I can plug Devin Williams in pretty much every week, even if he's not getting saves, and he will help me in potentially 3 to 4 categories each week. Does that mean taking him in round 5? Maybe not.
Yeah.
That's the gamble. That's the gamble was taken there. But it's like Ryan Helsley went 2 picks later. Ryan Helsley's great. We also know how the Cardinals handle the relievers. every year. It seems like it's Helsley should be the guy. I'm not saying he shouldn't be, but then again, go ask Paul Sporer when we were in first pitch Arizona and he took Giovanni Gallegos in like the fourth round and I was razzing him from across the room. And where's Giovanni now? That was just one situation, and I love to give Sporer crap for it, so that's why I mention it. But you know, Felix Bautista went a couple later. Felix is awesome. It's still the Orioles. Like, what are we doing
he's
here?
He's been a closer for 2 weeks.
Yeah. So that was my train of thought there. Like, yep. then it went like David Bednar. So like, if you look at that kind of realm of closers outside of maybe Ryan Helsley, if you wanted to, the next like four or five closers that went off the board, I'm going to argue Devin Williams is better than pretty much all of them. But they might have a job and he might not. That's the caveat, I guess.
Yep. And so, yeah, to kind of recap, like the closers, that was a great point. So it was Edwin Diaz in the second, then Class A, Jordan Romano, Liam Hendricks went in the first pick of the fourth round, Josh Hader mid fourth round, then Mai Presley mid fourth round. And then Bubba, like you said, in the fifth, it was Devin Williams, Helsley, Felix Bautista, Kenley Jansen. So, it sure seems like, and again, there's some risk in taking one draft and kind of extrapolating that to an ADP trend, that much is obvious. But I think these kind of closers with the role, with the skill, I don't think they're going to be any discount from what we saw with record high prices in draft season heading into 2022. I think that's going to be the same kind of deal next season.
And you made a great point. Like, we can't really use this small sample. It's August, ADP, don't really make a trend here. The one caveat I will say, because I agree with you, this is a sharp, sharp room. So I don't see this guy. I wouldn't be surprised if this is close to what we'll get early on. Now, it might change come that's like true. February and March, but November drafts, I could see this being close. That's the fun part that'll be interesting looking back at. Yep. All right. Surprises. We already mentioned Tatis earlier. He went to Waxman in the fourth round. That could be a boon or a bane. We'll see how that goes. But then he doubled down. In round five, he took Mike Trout, who's coming back, but still, as we've mentioned many times on this show since the back injury, sketchy, concerning. Like, what's if you look at Mike Trout's Fangraphs page, it's a season-to-season thing where he does not play a lot of baseball games. So it's tough, Ryan. What's your thoughts on that one?
So the point was made in the draft. Yeah, Brian Slack took four picks before Mike Trout, took Corbin Carroll. So Corbin Carroll went ahead of Mike Trout. We'll see what the injury is, that sort of thing. Trout will not be a late fifth rounder if he's healthy in the spring. I think that was one where this is one of the things of just drafting blind. The room, I think he just kind of slipped. And that happens in a single draft. So it was an interesting play by Waxman to bite the bullet and do it. John Fish was at 15 on the wheel, and Fish was all ready to take Mike Trout. So Trout would not have gone any further than that. It's just an interesting roster with Waxman, with Tatis and Trout. Like, that's exciting, or that's depressing, one of the two. Probably not much room in between. But that was one who definitely stuck out as a surprise. Is probably like the one who I thought was going to be very who just slipped well past where he should, was Trout. The other one where the room kind of gasped was Weimer. Took in the third round, took Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette fell out of the first two rounds, and it was funny, like, both me and you, again, drafting five and six, so this was like three picks before us. We had it all queued up to go Bo Bichette in the third round. I think Bo Bichette's still a second rounder despite the down, quote unquote, down season. I thought that was a great pick by Weimer to snag Bichette early third round.
Yeah, I had Bichette and Lindor queued up, and they went three picks and the pick before me. So I was like, oh, sweet, good times, good room, guys. That was Bichette was a heck of a steal there. He won't be there, and I don't think in later drafts. So enjoy that. But then again, you can make arguments that everyone on the forum deserves to be there. So it'll be interesting that the pool is deep. The pool is very deep this year early on. The other, I guess, surprise to some, but if you really dig into it, not so much. I just wanted to bring it up. In round four, Ryan Roof took Michael Harris in round four. I wanted to bring that up because he is beasting. There's no reason why he shouldn't be with the team. Like, he's going to continue being a starter for the Braves next year. I just don't think people realize maybe how good he's been, but a full season of what he's doing right now, round four could potentially be a value. Like, if he does that, so that's pretty crazy too.
Yeah, and I'll admit, like, I don't have any Michael Harris on any of my teams this season. Like, he was totally off my radar. He wasn't even on my list. And again, that's on me. The room really liked that pick in the early fourth round of Michael Harris. It sounds like Harris, assuming this kind of continues through the end of the season, especially with like Dansby Swanson as a pending free agent, Harris might move up in the order a little bit. It sounds like Harris could be, I hate to say the words, like this year, Cedric Mullins, it could be that type of rise for Michael Harris, just given the kind of stolen bases and that sort of thing. So someone who I need to dive in a little bit deeper or a lot deeper this offseason, just because it's someone who came out of the blue and I don't have any of my team. So I just have not been following him during the season. Those kinds of guys kind of fell for me, just guys who just popped up and I are not on my radar yet until we kind of look at the player pool from a fresh standpoint this offseason.
No doubt about it. Some surprising players who weren't drafted. Adelis Garcia, that was a big topic of conversation after the, in the group. I had him on my radar for like two rounds. I just kept passing. I'm like, oh. So I can't wait to see if he goes quickly or not in the next round once we start back up. Chris Sale, who, again, if healthy, big if, could be a steal at this point in the draft. Giolito's just been a mess of maybe a new year at this price point. Who knows? Gonsolin, who's been elite, but is it really for real? Can you do it 2 years in a row? Like, there's a lot of questions. That's probably why some of these guys are there. But and there's probably many more if we were to dig in. But
one name I didn't put on was, but I brought up was Nestor Cortez, and everyone was like, "Oh yeah, I would have taken him too." So to what we were speaking about before with starting pitchers, like it seems very deep, and we just rattled off four or five names. I'm sure we forgot more. But even in the seventh round, the starting pitchers that went were Tyler Glasnow, who you mentioned it to Kenyon. You took Blake Snell, and I made the quip. It's not second half only league, man. Yeah. But I actually like Blake Snell. He has punched my main event ticket for next there season already. So I like that. But Christian Javier, Nick Lodolo, Zach Gallen, those types of arms went in the seventh round. So go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, I don't want to dig into Zach Gallen. I just want to bring it up to people listening. Go look at what he's done this year. He deserves so much more attention than he's getting. He's been ridiculous.
All strikeouts today. So
yeah, so I just want to bring that up. He's ERA below three, but where are we going?
So we want to talk about our own teams and kind of
real quick though, one other name that did not get picked that I'm really curious. Giancarlo's still out there. That's a lot of power.
Someone who's like, and I don't know, maybe because he's currently hurt.
Yeah.
Like that plays into our kind of psyche.
Not my team.
I'm not a sand guy. Never really have been, but he will go in the top.
At this point in the draft, I'm interested. But okay, I'll let you have the floor, Mr. Pick Six. Why don't you talk about your picks here, what your thought process was.
So like I said, we were 5-6, and not to, you know, we kind of joke overanalyzing the first round, but I think this is fun and no one else has really done this yet. So I wanted to take a hitter in the first round. I want to build around a hitter, and I was hoping I had five clear hitters that I wanted to take. Those hitters in order were Trey Turner, Jose Ramirez, Otani, Acuna, and J-Rod. And the first four hitters all were taken. So it started Trey Turner, then Otani, who I think Otani could be 1-1.
I thought he would be in a DC format, personally.
Yeah, just because it's, you can adjust hitting, pitching. Based
you basically on have 51 players now.
Yep. Otani, J-Ram, and then J-Rod. And I was like, man, Bubba, if you take Acuna, I'm going to be pissed because I don't know what I'm going to really do.
What would you have done?
So if I probably would have taken Corbin Burns. I probably would have taken Corbin
makes me feel
Burns
even worse now.
Overall, I like Burns. I just think and this season going into this season, I had Cole over Burns. Burns this season, it's just one more season of being Corbin Burns. So Corbin Burns was my top pitcher. I would have gone Burns, Judge, or Tucker, probably Burns. But you made that decision for me by taking Gerrit Cole. Again, not a bad pick at all. It's just I wanted to start, and I took Acuna in this sixth overall, which I love. So that's how that started.
Yeah, no, that's great. But just go through your whole roster, and then I'll go through mine.
All right, I started Acuna, then I went Nola, went Starling Marte in the third round. I probably drafted Starling Marte for 12 years in a row, and Aaron Nola. Like this is a classic Bloomfield team. Ryan Pressly in the fourth, so got the closer. Spencer Strider, I went with in the fifth, and kind of like, and I mentioned this during the Zoom, and you'll hear it on the pod. It felt like this guy's falling, and I need to take him, which usually doesn't work out. And I'm honestly like, I'm worried a little bit about Spencer Strider's innings, obviously for the rest of this season, but heading into next season as well. But I thought in the fifth round, like Spencer Strider on my actual sheet was like my number four starting pitcher. I don't have him ranked that high, but the that's what the numbers said, just kind of my back of the napkin calc. So Spencer Strider in the fifth round, and then I followed that up with boring bats, which is again typical Bloomfield. I took Xander Bogaerts in the sixth, one pick after Dansby Swanson, which is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. There was actually, so in the sixth round, Wander Franco, Corey Seager, Dansby Swanson, and Xander Bogaerts in that order went. And then in the seventh round, I just took Wilson Contreras. I went back and forth between Wilson and Contreras and Adelis Garcia. Probably should have taken Garcia, but I already had two other outfielders. And I don't know. That's my excuse at least. But I think Adelis Garcia should have been taken in this draft. I should have taken him in the seventh round, but I went Wilson Contreras instead.
Yeah, I'm kind of mad I didn't get Adelis as well. That's when I kept looking at. But yeah, as we've mentioned a million times, and if people saw a tweet today, Brian Slack put it in our DMs, so I thought I had to tweet it out. It was a picture of me with him quoting, why the F did I draft Garrett Cole? Because it's how I felt from the get-go. Like, I love Garrett Cole. I think he's amazing. He's great. Acuna,
but and I mean, you mentioned this, but this is the thing of drafting blind. If you knew that you could have gotten a Woodruff Wheeler in the second round,
exactly. Like looking at the board, looking at the board now, it's like, that was just such a stupid pick. Like, looking
it's
at
not
the
a whole, stupid pick. It's just, it's drafting blind. That's what happens.
Yeah. So then I went Lou Bob in round two because I love the power speed. It's just, can you please stay healthy? Because even when he doesn't stay healthy, he puts up respectable numbers that would project out to a great season, but just stay healthy, please. So I took the gamble there. And then I went Ozzie Albies. He's one of the ones I think maybe, because he was like a round two pick last year. So I think the fact he's injured maybe pushed him down a little bit, I just like him too much. I don't know. But this is a power speed guy. I know he kind of had a little bit of a down year this year, but I like the bounce back in round three there, especially at second base where we talked about it in the chat. It's one of those positions that might be a little rough this year overall compared to like last year was third base and the guys were breaking down. Second base could be a little rough going forward. And then I went with one of my staples. I've had him pretty much every year since he's been a regular, is Randy Arozarena. The dude can hit, and he can hit for power, and he can run. So I love the power-speed combo. I went Devin Williams in round five. We've talked about that enough. And then this was just, I guess, just had to do it. I went Reese's Pieces, Reese Hoskins in round six because two reasons. A, I love Reese Hoskins, and he's finally doing what I've yelled at forever, and people say he can't because he can't hit for average. But I need power. That's the one thing I was looking at my team. And so that's why I was like, Adelis was on my list. Even that's where Giancarlo at least came into the discussion for me. I was looking at available players and potential 30 home run guys. And there wasn't a ton that made me feel warm and fuzzy. There's always going to be some, but Reese, I can pencil in my mind and barring a weird injury, 30 plus homers easily.
Would you have taken? So just three picks before that, Rob D took Vinny Pasquantino. Do you have Hoskins ahead of
Pasquantino? I have Hoskins ahead, but I wouldn't be shocked if Vinny's better. Vinny's awesome. Vinny's great. It's one of those, this is where the blind thing, I don't know where prospects go right now. And like,
he's going to be hard to.
Vinny P's awesome. And it's one of those you could draft in one draft. He could be like a fourth round pick, depending on who you're with, or there's other drafts he could fall. I love Vinny P, so I don't mind that at all. But yeah, Reese is there. And then I went Blake Snell, which is not a normal Bubba pick, but I can acknowledge the changes he's made this year and looks pretty like the K to walk percentage. We talk about it all the time, Bloomfield. You look at Snell's K to walk is over 30%. Like that is elite stuff he's doing out there. He's going six innings in most games, playing on a good Padres team. So as my SP2, I went there. That was interesting.
I mean, I put a Snell tweet out earlier this week. Blake Snell last season had the best strikeout minus walk rate of any starting pitcher after August 1st last season. He's number two this season over the last month. So, like, he's just got to put it together for a full early season, which he's done before. I mean, the guy has won a Cy Young. So, I'm fine with Blake Snell there.
But I guess the moral of the story, and I've heard, like, James Anderson and some others talk about it, is, and we talked about already, pitching's deep, so you can kind of wait and still get some really solid arms. At the same time, there's still a lot of them out there. And if you do your DC research properly, you can just Phil DeSoto talks about it. It's maybe get an ace or two early, tons of hitters, and then he just goes on a pitching barrage and just like all these like third, fourth, fifth starters that he can pencil in throughout the week, just rack up innings. So lots of options out there. But what's your takeaways from the first seven rounds here? Because it was fun. A lot of stuff off the board. Catchers went way more aggressive than I thought. We already kind of talked about. Oh, we didn't talk about that, but I think we had like 10 catchers or whatever go off the board. That was wild. So, and I don't have any, so I've got that going for me.
Yeah, the catchers that went off, it looks like there were eight catchers, and it was JT Realmuto in the fourth, followed by Will Smith, and then James Anderson took Adley Rutschman in the fifth round, which if you see what Adley Rutschman's been doing after his first month of adjusting to major league pitching, I totally get that. And then there was a huge run of catchers in the seventh round. So it was Dalton Varsho, my Wilson Contreras, Alejandro Kirk, taken by Brian Slack. Waxman took MJ Melendez, new name this early, along with Kirk, but names that I can certainly get behind in the seventh round, given the state of catching. And then Tyler Stevenson, Mr. Irrelevant in the last pick of the first portion of this to Mr. Fish. So that was sneaky, right? Yeah, because he's out.
He was one of the top catchers before he got hurt. Like, that's a sneaky one to put in there. That's why it's a sharp room. Like, yeah, certain picks would be made. I'm like, oh, I didn't even think about that guy. That's a good pick. Like, that's a smart pick right there. So that's the beauty of this. I'm looking forward to it. Like, again, I don't want to bring up the whole thing, but man, somebody's even fifth round, Robbie Ray, Yu Darvish, like those are good pitchers in the fifth round. So it's going to be fun looking back on this, seeing where it goes, and kind of itching to do another draft. I joked about it in the chat or in the room. I'm like, let's do another one in like a month and see where things change.
I want to, but we can't.
I'm with you. Gotta hold back. Discipline. All right, we got some listener questions here. Let's kick things off. Actually, Nate Curtis, he asks, can you discuss JD Martinez's power outage? Is he getting unlucky, or has age finally slowed him down? Yeah, he hasn't hit a home run in like a couple months, Ryan. It's been bad.
It's been really rough, and someone who, like, you can't not put in your lineup every week because it's JD Martinez. He could go off, so we think, at any point. 157 over his last 70 at bats with no home runs. His last homer was July 10th. If you look at the monthly kind of power metrics, honestly, to me, it looks fine. I mean, down a little bit from his peak, but I don't know. I want to say a little bit unlucky. I'm not saying he's going to bounce back or anything the rest of the way. He's 34. Like, you just wonder if there's some kind of Votto-esque injury or something going on. But he's still making hard contact. The strikeout rate over the last few months, and he's striking out a lot in August. So maybe he's pressing and things are getting to him. But no, from an overall aspect, I'm not like super worried. But for the rest of this season, like, things are not trending the right way. And you start to kind of press and get that strikeout rate up, like Martinez has had in August. And it's concerning because time's running out for him to turn it around.
Yeah, he's not the set it and forget it he once was. That's for sure. I'm not saying he's a drop, but I'd understand it. Like, in a 10 team, you can probably drop him. There's going to be replacements out there. 12s, it's up for debate. I wouldn't judge you if you did. Let's put it that way. I get it right now.
So I'd hold on to him. But
I would try. I would try, but I'd get it if you're hamstrung somehow to need to do it. Little Book of Calm says, Pablo Lopez, career high innings pitched, worst fastball velocity in 4 years, ERA, XERA, FIP, Sierra within 0.15 of each other. Last six starts from July 19th to August 18th. 7.2 ERA, 1.53 WHIP, 30 Ks, 8 walks, and 30 innings pitched. 3.26 ERA and 160 innings pitched. What is the true talent for 23? Is he broken rest of season? And opponents in that stretch were San Diego, Atlanta, Cubs, Mets, Texas, Cincy, at Cincy. So maybe just a brutal stretch is what he wanted to clarify before he completely threw him under the bus, basically.
So it was a good piece of analysis, like, as part of the question.
Yeah, as I kept reading, I'm like, oh, I'm reading Fangraphs. No, that was Little Book of Calm coming through.
So we kind of touched on this earlier with Tyler Mahle and shoulder injuries and that sort of thing. Pablo Lopez was a guy who I was completely off in draft season, 100%. For that reason, and kind of looked like a fool early on. At a 0.39 ERA in April, 2.78 ERA in May, looked great. But the velocity was down. In season, the velocity is actually up. He's throwing in July through 93.6. His last three starts in August, 94. That's compared to 93.2, 92.8 over the first 2 months of this season. So, like, the velocity is there. The swinging strike rate is there. I think this is just kind of an either unlucky or tough schedule with on a Marlins team that's really kind of hard to play for right now. I think if you bought into Pablo Lopez before the season and you look past kind of the shoulder risk, I don't see a whole lot of change in his skill set in season.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. And I was with you as well. I was just off of him going into the season. He got some goods in the beginning, might be catching up. And one of the biggest things that he mentioned, career high in innings pitched, he might just be out. You're a big gassed. Like that happens, especially if you already have a shoulder injury to begin with. Like that's, he just might be gassed. That's just the bottom line of the situation. So, yeah, sucks, but maybe something to keep in mind for next year. Jeff Zimmerman asks, Adelis Garcia is the 19th rated player at Razzball, but was not drafted. Do you think he should have been drafted? And if so, where? I want to check something real quick before you answer, Ryan. But on my Razzball player rater, I did a 15-team Yahoo League, and he was 14th on the player rater. Wow. So that's what really stung every time I kept staring at that. We already said he should have been drafted, yes.
Yep. I think that's just a miss by the room. And we talked about we kind of shot the shit after the draft for maybe like a half hour or whatever and talked about guys who didn't get picked up. I know that's kind of – you don't bring up guys who haven't been drafted yet, but – I don't know. We're doing this in August and we were done with phase one. So we brought up a bunch of names and Adelis Garcia was the hitter that the room brought up where it's like, yeah, why did nobody take him? I mean, like nobody seems to like Adelis Garcia, especially given like, I mean, going into this season with the second half fade and the plate skills and that sort of thing. But dude had 31 homers, 16 steals last season, 19 homers, 17 steals this season.
The 2020 bat.
You know, yep. I mean, those do not grow on trees at this point. And if you told me I could get Adelis Garcia in the seventh round of a draft next spring, I would be gung-ho. And that's coming from me who was completely off Adelis Garcia coming into this season. So I just think one of those guys, again, in any given draft, people are going to fall. And that was Adelis Garcia in this one.
Mr. Run TMC gives you a big props. Bloomfield.
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah, Tim McLeod coming through in a big way for you. So speed.
He's looking at those for labor mix next season. So
yeah, he's your competition over there. Speed, yep. SP times two, closer, decent catcher. He's a decent catcher. Just gotta throw a little curveball to you. You'll find power later. Well done in addressing what I believe is a potential areas of concern heading into 2023.
Tim's going to first pitch Arizona as well. So see
he's coming this year? Yep. Sweet. Good to hear. Ryan Roof, who again made the amazing draft board with the stickers. It was one of the best things I've ever seen in a makeshift draft. He asks, you mentioned Strider falling when you took him, and I strongly debated taking him in the fourth. Had Harris gone earlier, Strider would have been my pick. Where were you expecting him to go, and where do you think he'll go at the height of draft season?
Yeah, so I was expecting Spencer Strider to go like in the third round, maybe fourth. And that's, I think, where he will go next draft season. Again, assuming these last 5-6 weeks, whatever, kind of he keeps doing what he's been doing. So, yeah, I took him in the fifth, and I kind of mentioned this earlier. Like, didn't feel that thrilled about it. It was one of those he's falling, so I'll take him types. And a lot of times that doesn't work out. So I'm probably not taking Spencer Strider in the third or fourth, but I do think that's probably where he's going to go. And, again, the big reason why I'm skeptical is just – a major innings jump from someone who hasn't been a starter for a full season in quite some time.
Yep. Yep. It'll be interesting. The repertoire is amazing. The dude's a beast. Yes. We'll have to wait and see. Richard Sands asks, how soon would you draft Felix Bautista? He went in round five, a few picks after the greatest closer in baseball, Devin Williams. So where would you draft Felix Bautista?
That sounds about right. Again, assuming this spring, he's still in the role, that sort of thing, yada, yada, yada. But that's the information we have right now. If I had to pick between, so let's see, the fifth round closers again were your Williams, Ryan Helsley, Felix Bautista, Kenley Jansen. I would rank them Williams, Bautista, Jansen, Helsley right now. But I think Felix Bautista will be like a fifth round pick next season, assuming he has the job. Yep. And – that certainly makes sense to me.
Yeah, Felix is awesome. There's no doubt in that. And then he also asked, is Bobby Witt a first rounder? He went 114. He went to the first round to, I would see him, I think he's more of a second rounder, but we'll see. It's justifiable.
So the thing with Witt, I think he'll be one of those wheel guys just because of stolen bases, like top five guy in steals with Bobby Witt's pedigree. Honestly the plate skills and the power this season, not that great from Bobby Witt. And I actually wrote him up. I did like a rookie class check-in for HQ in the Speculator this past week, and I kind of wrote exactly that. Was like, for all the praise that Bobby Witt has been getting, kind of he started out horribly and kind of has been in a slump lately as well. So you wonder what the adjustment is. That said, I mean, dude's 22, was HQ's number one prospect heading into the season. Like, there's certainly the theory that he could improve at age 23, right? Like, that makes a ton of sense. So I think Bobby Witt being kind of a wheel pick, 15, 16 in the first round, is probably where he's going to go. I'm okay with that price. I'm probably going somewhere else just for a little bit more safety on the batting average and power side, but totally understand why you would take him there.
Yeah, definitely. And and one other thing I'll throw in there, a shortstop third base option, especially in a DC.
That's a good point.
That's huge. That's a really good point. Big to have. Say What says Trevor Story third round is absolute craziness. He's on the other side of his career. Dude's numbers weren't good in Colorado in his last season, and this season he had one good week. Awful. All I say is go listen to the podcast.
Yes,
because I'm not gonna even comment on it. Just go listen to the podcast.
Just go listen to the podcast. We had immediate reasoning for the pick. I can't give you a minute marker, but just go listen to the pod. Man. It was fantastic. So
yes,
it was good. And the person who picked Trevor Story, Jason DuPont, will say, it's all out there. Responded to that tweet and said, remind me, I guess there's like a Twitter bot that reminds you of things at a certain day. And he said, remind me next October. So, listen to the commentary on that Trevor Story pick at the, in the third round.
All I'll say is Jason was amazing because he was on mute most of the time, but whenever he had something to say, it was like priceless. It was like when you took Xander, he said he had DMX
references. He had it queued up on his phone, man. It's like, this is awesome.
He had everything going on over there, but he was on mute, so he'd be quiet. You'd see him moving around, but then he'd unmute, and whatever he said, it was gold. Like the entire time.
It was cool. I have never met him, but he was a real fun hang. He was fun to hang with.
He was definitely good. Heath Cap says, love that catcher pool looking deep. Yep, we kind of hit on that. And there's still a lot of good ones out there. Really, there is. And that's what I've commented on all year. Like, you can almost stream catchers all year with decent options because it's deeper than usual, it feels like.
And obviously, really the takeaway, DC, like, you can't, though. Yeah. And I think the takeaway for a lot of listeners, if you're in keeper leagues or one catcher leagues, I would punt catcher.
Yeah. 100%.
It's a very deep. I mean, just a few minutes ago, I went through all the catchers that went in the seventh round, all great choices. And like you said, Bubba, a few still out there hanging out. So it's it seems a little deeper than normal.
Our buddy Alan Daily and Artist asks, how much money would someone have to pay? He always has great questions. Have to pay you? Never. I feels like Yancey Eaton's hacked this account because he always came up with like unique questions for a podcast. But he says, how much money would someone have to pay you to never play fantasy baseball again? Please give answers in both U.S. dollars and Japanese yen. I don't know the transfer to yen, so I can't help you there. But to quit playing fantasy baseball, I don't know. Probably not that much money, but I do love playing it. So it's kind of what about you? I'll let you have the floor on this one. It's tough.
So I'll answer it. So it's funny. Like, I actually thought about this leading up to it. If it's strictly just playing, whatever.
We still podcast?
Yeah, if I can still analyze and do pods and go to first pitch and interact with people, like, I put this out. I actually like that part more than playing. Mm-hmm. Like, give me an awesome podcast where people comment and people say great pod or that article helped me, whatever. Give me that over like 100%. A team that wins the league. Like, no one cares about that. So if it's strictly playing, like, whatever. I do this because of the people in the industry and just analyzing the game and writing about it. That's what I truly like to do. To answer Alan's question in terms of like no fantasy baseball at all, I was thinking about this, and honestly, it would have to be enough money so that I could retire.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is like, this is what we do. Like, this is our hobby. For me, like, this keeps me going
Yep.
As weird as this sounds, like this keeps me going throughout the week. Like, I have got my day job. I support my family. I love spending time with my family. Like, that, it's fantastic. But like, I live off of this stuff, and you couldn't pay me enough to where if I had to just do my day job and not look forward to this podcast or writing this article or interacting with people on a daily basis for this hobby that we all share and that we love, like, you'd have to pay me a lot of money to completely shut out fantasy baseball. That's my take on it. I don't know how that translates to yen. I don't know how much I need to retire. A lot of money, I'm sure, but that's my take on it.
That's a great take, and I agree with everything you said about that's why I've done this forever. Like, I've only played in FBC for a couple of years just so people would like shut up about it, basically. And I like the format, don't get me wrong, but I did this because I like fantasy baseball and talking baseball and doing that kind of thing. So that I agree. It would have to be some kind of, I think it would have to be enough money to where I wouldn't need to even worry about watching baseball. Because like, I like watching baseball, I watch my Giants, but in reality, I love watching like MLB Network so they can jump around to games and see if my fantasy guy just hit a home run or something. Like, I could care less about a lot of things. It's like watching the Red Zone for football. Do you really have a favorite football team anymore? Most of the time, no. You just want your fantasy team to do well. And that's kind of the baseball life of it. And it's like Ryan said, it's like we have our day jobs. This year, I realized how much I really enjoy fantasy baseball in this community. It's been a very big big thing for me. So, Ryan said it very nicely, very, very well. I hope people didn't think it was too cheesy or corny, because it's true. It's not for everybody, but it's a cool thing that I got. Again, shameless plug. It's a good reason to go to First Pitch Arizona. Like, you get to meet a lot of cool people and realize there's a lot of us out there that love baseball, love fantasy baseball, and it's pretty darn cool. So that's where I'll leave it at that before I start getting too sappy on you guys. But that's a good one there. Good catch, good question, Alan. I appreciate it. Drew, our last question, that Drew at @Fru_Dorte. How did you decide on Nola versus the other starting pitchers that went right after your pick? Not concerned we'll stop with that one. How'd you take Nola over the other starting pitchers?
I just like Nola for the volume and the skills. Going into the draft, I was just kind of scheming it out. Happy to take either Brandon Woodruff or Nola in the second round. If either of those two fell to me, I would have been happy, and I had the choice between the two. Honestly, in at least right now, I kind of think of those two guys as a coin flip. I don't like Julio Urias as much. It's just, I just don't like the skills as much, but certainly understand that pick. But Nola for me, it's just the volume. Like, that dude is just a horse. And I know it was down last year when I had him on a bunch of teams, but we saw what he can do this season. And yeah, just that, and those innings are gold with those skills. Yep. So,
and that's such a big thing. And again, it's something I keep wanting to, I'm going to do some work on in articles and whatnot this off season. Just even this draft brought to my attention, like my need that I don't draft power properly. But the NFBC, I know people like don't like talking about it, and we like to kind of incorporate other formats, but we're talking an NFBC draft, so that's the brass tacks of it. You need innings, you need at-bats, people talk about that. And sure, Aaron Nola can be frustrating if you watch a game. We've talked about it so many times. It's like he's dealing, in like that one inning. But we care about the total package, and like you said, Aaron Nola gives you innings pitched, he gets you strikeouts, like he does things, and in the end, because you're going to pretty much start him every week, unlike other guys, the ratios are going to be fine. Like, so you look at the big picture, you look at the big picture like Aaron Nola, and it's so good. But most people just remember, like, when you tilt that start he had, where it's just like, what just happened? He was dealing, and now he leaves with 5 earned runs over 7 innings. You're like, what the? So big picture with Nola, he's actually a legit beast in a format like this. And the other part of Drew's question here, are you not concerned that Marte's steals are way down this year?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, especially with the age, I go safety so early in drafts that like, it's almost like second nature to take, for me, Starling Marte in the second, third round. That said, I mean, dude still has 15 steals this year and probably might finish closer to 20. Like, in today's environment, that's almost a top 10 stolen base guy. And then on top of that, you add the batting average, the consistency, and some good pop. So, like, yeah, Starling Marte coming down in steals is true, but you're coming down from 47 steals last year to 20. I'm okay if he goes 20 again. I think that'd be fine out of the third round, given what else Starling Marte does for your team.
100%. And, yeah, Starling Marte, Lou Bob, it's going to be fun when all the content comes out this offseason for like ADP debates and other things. And I can already see a foreshadowing Adelis Garcia versus those two guys based on draft price, because we're talking 20 stolen bases and everything. Like, average is down, but overall for the difference in your draft, that's the kind of things that are fun looking at these draft boards. Like, that's what I love about it. And it's freaking August, which is dumb, but it's it was so much fun to sit back and be like, wow, this is like, it opens your eyes already, and we still have to set lineups tomorrow morning, Ryan, or you already did tonight. Like, we got stuff to do still. So. Yeah, we already got stuff to do, but we'll wrap it up there. That was a fun, they're always fun episodes. That was fun talking some draft. Like we said earlier, we've said it off the air and stuff. Is I even went into last night thinking like, man, do we really need to do this right now? Like, I was the grumpy guy in the DM earlier saying, do we have a time limit on picks? Because I'm like, I don't want to be here all night. And the next thing you know, it was absolutely amazing. So final thoughts, Ryan.
I got nothing. This was an awesome week, awesome pod. I'm like fired up for 2023 already, but let's get through 22. We still got some races to win down the stretch.
And keep your questions coming for the pod, because we'll do our best to help you guys go down the stretch. Get your questions in. Hopefully the weekend matchups things helps you guys for streaming, because I know like Joe G and some others, they've DM'd me the other day that they're just streaming day to day now. They're grinding their butts off. So keep them coming. Keep grinding. There's lots of ways to get up the rankings. So for Ryan, he's on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Go check out his work at BaseballHQ as usual. I'm on Twitter at BDentric. And we'll be back to you guys next week with another episode of Bubba and the Bloom. Catch you all later.
Life's better with an auto policy from American Family Insurance. No matter what dreams you're driving towards. That's because our expert agents will make you feel totally protected with the right auto coverage at the right price. You'll also save up to 23% when you bundle auto with home. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.